two of Nerds. This is yet another variety show. I am not alone. I am joined by my co-host, Abby.
Hello, I'm Abby.
X-Men 97 is the continuation of the X-Men series from the 90s, which aired on Fox as an animated block. This series, also animated, of course, sees the X-Men updated, or returned, I should say, to protect a world that hates and fears them. Thus far, there are two episodes out on Disney Plus, and we're going to talk about them. Season 1, Episode 1, To Me, My X-Men, is the first episode of the revamped series. To get into everything, this first episode, by the way, is essentially retelling of Night of the Sentinels, which is the first episode of X-Men, the animated series, as in the plot follows similar beats. There's actually some similar scenes to it. But in this case, it's not Jubilee at the mall getting rescued from Sentinels. In this one, it is a new mutant we have not seen in the television series, who should be pretty familiar to X-Men fans, though. It's Roberto. It's Sunspot. He is rescued from the Friends of Humanity, who are using Sentinel technology. It just occurred to me. So X-Men, the original show, came out in the 90s. We had the Friends of Humanity, who were a villain in that as well, too.
Mm-hmm. We do have to specify that the Friends of Humanity are the villains.
Yeah,
well, some people did not get the memo.
Apparently, yes.
Of them doing villainous things. The Friends of Humanity are, in fact, the villains.
Anyway, I just think it's funny. I'm thinking about it now. That show was from the 90s, and the Friends of Humanity really haven't changed. The look of them in this is taken directly from that, and they still have, they've got the short form of their group on their hats, which is FOH, an armed militant group who want to get rid of minorities. Anyway.
Again, very clearly the bad guys.
The X-Men arrive on the scene to save Roberto. From there, we sort of get a catch up combined with the X-Men dealing with loose plot threads from the original series, which, by the way, allows the second episode to really kind of start fresh, which was a nice thing to do. This, of the two episodes, is the most sort of rooted in the past, most nostalgic, super tied into actual comic storylines with comic characters. There's nothing here that's not from the comics. If you're familiar with those, you'll have no trouble catching up. But even if you're not, they did a good job of explaining who everyone is.
As the world's foremost connoisseur and collector of X-Men comics, that's a real thing. That's not a joke. They are, in fact, doing X-Men 97, as in we are pretty much where the X-Men comics were in 1997. So the plot lines that were going on in the mid-late 90s, you can sort of see that they're leaning into that, particularly when it comes to certain characters like Gambit, Magneto's hanging out. Are we doing spoilers?
Yes, it's full spoilers, but Magneto only appears at the end of the first episode. So what we're talking about the first episode is, as one of the few holdovers from the first series, Xavier's not present. He was poisoned, quote unquote, in the finale of the first series, and had to go to space where the Shi'ar are healing him, which all of this sort of happened in the comics too, which also leads into the second episode, which was Mutant Liberation Begins. That sees Magneto take over as the headmaster of Xavier's school for gifted children and becomes their leader. And yeah, that's where Magneto comes in. But for the first episode, it focuses mainly on the X-Men. There's some really good stuff in it, but there's some stuff that makes me laugh. For example, you mentioned this, and I mean, it's something I noticed immediately. The opening battle, the X-Men take on the Friends of Humanity. Some of the X-Men are not there. Like Wolverine's not there.
Well, but they send a couple of powerhouses, right? They send Storm and somebody
Rogue's
else.
Rogue's not there either. The ones they do send, Storm, the aforementioned Storm and Bishop, briefly get knocked out. Now, the plot reason they get knocked out, or rather the real reason they get knocked out, let's be honest, is to give each character a moment of them doing stuff and showing off their powers.
That, and it also makes the villains a credible threat?
I don't think they really were. They get cut down pretty easily here. And in episode two as well, they get annihilated pretty easily, minus the executioner. The average friend of humanity is not all that much of a threat to them.
Well, no, but they've been grafting tech onto their onto themselves.
Yes, but even with it, they're not shown as it. And especially to somebody like Bishop, who literally absorbs their weapons.
I think, honestly, it's more just to...
I think it's just to give each X-Man an introduction and a moment.
Well, but I also really do think it is to establish that, okay, these are the bad guys and they are a credible threat. Marvel did this really smart thing where they could have different things, like very, very different things happen to their core properties. But, oh, this is in universe 616, or this is in universe 1198, you know? So they're all sort of parallel realities, because in the current comic X-Men universe, Storm can terraform a planet. So granted, this is like 30 years ago for her and she's younger and stuff like that. But I laughed so hard when like some dude with a gun, essentially, it's a powerful gun, but just, you know, can pop her in the back and she's just, ah! It's the old Jean Grey stuff in the old series where they just had to have her like fall over a bunch because otherwise she could just
annihilate everybody.
To be fair,
they do give Storm that moment. There's the sweet moment later on. Their X-Men are fighting the Sentinels. Then one of the Sentinels just says, Omega level mutant detected. And in walks Storm, walking in, turning the Sahara Desert to glass as lightning strikes it. And then she proceeds to just create a hurricane quite easily, wipes out all of the Sentinels except for Master Mold. Master Mold gets dispatched in a neat way because we see really the first instance in the animated shows of the mutant circuits is from the recent comics, the Krakoa Age, of mutants combining their powers.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like looking back and... call it 30 years. It's not actually been 30 years in the timeline. I think it's been like 10. But looking back and seeing sort of like, okay, they're the beginnings of who they are going to be in 2024 comic. So they are very powerful, but they haven't grown into those powers yet, if you will. So Storm, I mean, controls the weather, but what does that actually mean? And when you figure out that that means air pressure, that means water, you know, that means almost everything alive, right? Then you can do some weird stuff and it gets weird. And then we're in 2024. But for right now, we just need something very simple, I think. We need something which is that humanity is building robots that can detect mutants and will kill mutants, and those are the bad guys. We don't want them to do that.
That sort of ends the first episode. The end of the first specifically, though, Magneto comes in and says, oh yeah, by the way, I got the last will and testament of Charles Xavier, which, by the way, apparently Xavier put those little metal bindings on the edge of the book, hopefully just because he thought like, oh man, you know, Eric could really like this. He could do a dramatic thing where he lifts the book up and shows everybody.
Magneto, master of magnetism.
Master of magnets.
Always the X-Men's greatest foe isn't now in charge of the X-Men? What?
Yeah. So episode two, Mutant Liberation Begins, is an X-Men animated version of the trial of Magneto from the comics. Magneto is forced by the UN to stand trial, probably for all the killing.
Because he just did a little bit of terrorism.
Yeah, just a bit. And we see the sort of fallout of that in that the Friends of Humanity storm a government building where a democratically voted on event is taking place. And
they're trying to influence a legally binding decision. Again, the villains.
Which, by the way, this is taken from comics many, many years beforehand, and we'll get into it a little later, but if you're somebody who's whining about this, it's because you were the bad guys.
So here's the thing. So I went back and I did my research and I went back into my memory palace.
Oh God.
And we did a comics pickup from our comics guy this weekend, and we got a couple of X-Men trades that are the current sort of X-Men comics.
Krakoa era, yes.
Yeah, and in this sort of era that's coming to an end, it was nice. I liked it, but it was also very complex. You're getting into the X-Men now have control of a sovereign nation, or the mutants rather, and sort of how do you it's that kind of, I'm going to say Game of Thrones type intrigue, but like very, very light because it's still a comic book. But we had some really, really interesting storylines come out of that and some really, really interesting things to think about. So, you know, Beast being a villain because he's doing essentially what the CIA does to keep America, number one. He's trying to keep Krakoa, the mutant nation, number one.
Yeah.
And it turns him villainous. But if you are a student of history, this is all just the things that made the Western world dominant. So it's interesting stuff like that. It's way, 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 we got to dumb it down. We got to dumb it way down. We are not at a point yet as civilization where we can have that. We need to go back to something really, really simple. So Krakoa in the comics has fallen. And now we're back to mutants are being hunted and feared by Sentinels. Honestly, we need that right now because there are people who saw this X-Men 97, saw the Friends of Humanity, who are the villains. They have the little skulls. They're the baddies. They have the skulls on the uniform, and it's everything about them just screams villain. And they there are people who are, I'm sure, you know, outrage merchants who are going online and making YouTube videos and being like, oh, I don't like that they made the Friends of Humanity the villains, like the people who want to round
exterminate
up and
exterminate
a minority. Yeah, they don't want to exterminate
a minority.
Yeah.
Are the bad guys.
I mean, it's
very frustrating. It's very exhausting.
We need to keep it very simple, like it was in the 60s, right? They're defending.
Well, hang on. You say you need to keep it simple. The problem is even that doesn't work. In doing sort of research for this, I watched videos and I read the initial article that created the outrage from that certain group of people. They also say things like, well, X-Men's never been an analogy for humanity because even the quote unquote diverse group of X-Men that started it all doesn't count as an analogy for the real world because they were all from different countries. They weren't working together.
Diverse,
it's because they're from different countries. By the way, and the same group once wrote a piece, and I dug into this, talking about how Star Trek wasn't forward-thinking or progressive because it was aliens. And they specifically brought up the episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. We've talked about it on this show before. Frank Gorshin, half white one side, half black other side.
Sweet.
Other person, half black.
He was black on the left side.
Yes.
And he is black on the right side. It's different.
Yeah. So
it's
anyway,
different.
So,
I'm so mad.
And they argued that that was not an analogy because they were aliens. There's nothing to be learned from any of that. It is frustrating.
Yeah.
And you can't dumb it down enough. And at a certain point, X-Men, the entire premise of the series is a group, a minority group, fighting to protect their rights, and they're fighting for their existence in a world trying to eliminate them and trying to erase them from reality.
Yeah.
So your choice is that they're either willfully being hateful, which is probably very likely. You mentioned the outrage merchants who traffic in this, and that is definitely their gig. There are legitimately people who read these things or watch these things and just don't see it, to whom I don't even know what to say.
Yeah.
The outrage merchants are probably worse because I mean they're willing to profit off it and they're grifters and they want to weaponize hate. It's funny. Yeah, I talk about this with you on occasion. They're the opposite of somebody trying to be better. There's also letting people be and just not trying to continue a cycle of hate. Things like that, unfortunately, are beyond a lot of it.
Original X-Men, right? Beast, Angel, Cyclops, Jean Grey, Marvel Girl, Iceman. Five white people living in a Westchester mansion with a white guy, with a rich white guy at the head, right?
Yeah.
The X-Men were created because Stan Lee didn't want to have to think up all these different ways to give people power. So it's like, oh, well, maybe what if they're born with it? Boom.
Yeah.
Awesome. But then suddenly that opens up a whole bunch of really interesting storytelling avenues.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, yeah, OK, no, this actually could be a parallel for some stuff. And then you get giant sized X-Men coming up a little bit later in the 70s. And then you've got a diverse cast.
Yeah. I don't think it's coincidence that Giant Size X-Men is when X-Men really took off.
Really popped off, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not just the adventures of Whitey and Whiteville and Magneto with his Magna car.
Yeah, the Magneto,
you know,
reveal,
Storm from Kenya, Nightcrawler from Germany.
They even had a Canadian. They had a Canadian on the team.
Oh, represented. We don't have to have just Alpha Flight no more. Oh, we got an actual guy in the real team. It's always been the X-Men are trying to work within human systems. It's really only been the past 10 years with the Krakoa era where they've got their sovereignty. There's been sort of little touches and hints of they're realizing that, no, okay, we actually have a significant, we're a different species. You know, that doesn't mean that we want the humans to die, but it does mean that we should be doing things our way. There's been very little of that up until the last 10 years or so. Krakoa coming in. It's always been about mutants are humans. They're just different.
Yeah.
Magneto, of course, because he's a villain, fight me on this. Magneto has always had a different view from Charles Xavier. Xavier was always coexistence, right? Mutants are human. They're just different. Magneto, who has his own traumas that inform his worldview, is the antithesis of Charles Xavier. He is, no, mutants are the next step in evolution. Mutants are homo superior. They are above humans. The way that we, you know, see cats or cattle or whatever is
Magneto's
how we should think
of humans.
Viewpoint
is brought up, and it's brought up during this show and during his speeches to the UN that he was hunted and
he's a German Jew.
Yes, Magneto is a survivor of the Holocaust. In terms of X-Men, the animated series, N97, they've never made it explicitly clear, but there are definitely references heavy to it. And in this one, he says, you know, my kind, specifically says, as a boy, my people's homes were burned to ash because we dared to call God by another name.
Yeah, which is, he has a great speech.
Yeah, he is fantastic in this. And he frequently is fantastic. And one of the things with Magneto is he may be the villain frequently. In a lot of ways, we are all the product of our experiences. His experiences are what forged him into what he is. And you can at least understand it because he already survived one event of his people being cut down based on something that wasn't their choice.
Yeah, he doesn't want to kill all humans.
He sees it all happening again. He says
he just wants to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And he has the power to do something about that. And if some humans die while opposing genocide, then so be it.
Yeah, and he says this in the episode too. I say, as I have too many times before, never again. He specifically says, you know, what must we do to be good enough? Is this the high road's destination?
I also do like that. So Charles Xavier has been assassinated, the world thinks. I, as somebody who didn't really remember the 97 series, I don't know that he's off on another planet. So I assume that, like, oh wow, that was a choice they made. They knocked off the X in X-Men. And now, you know, their greatest enemy is going to come and join and lead the team. Magneto's episode is really episode two, but it's a really important episode, I think, for the character, but also for the tone of the series. The UN finds out where Magneto is, comes to arrest him because he has to undergo trial because of all the light treason, the light terrorism. And then the Friends of Humanity and the Executioner busts in, and they've got a weapon that will turn a mutant power off. They will turn mutants into just plain old humans.
The UN seemed fairly prepared to let Magneto be punished in some method before the Executioner shoots Storm and Storm loses her powers, which is another sort of central theme to this episode. Storm ends up leaving the X-Men because she's lost her abilities. Again, storyline from the comic series. We also have Jean Grey is pregnant, as we saw in the previous episode as well. But Jean is pregnant with Scott Summers, aka Cyclops' child.
They're married. It's okay, America. They're married.
And Jean goes into labor roughly around the time that the crowd busts into the UN. They end up going to a hospital, and one of the things that is juxtaposed during Magneto's speech about never again, when they arrive to the hospital, a doctor who would not help them because he says he doesn't do mutant births. The issue here is, again, of representation. This is a legitimate concern that happens quite frequently, even here in North America, of people who are visible minorities going to a doctor and being unable to get treatment simply based on something they were born with.
So in Canada, where UpNerd is from and will eventually one day rule with an iron fist with my benevolent dictatorship, we hate our natives. If you are native, you are probably going to get a lower quality of care. And it's disgusting. And we should be ashamed of it. And I'm proud of our country and the strides that we've been able to make, but like, it still happens today. And it's still more likely to happen if you are native.
The two episodes, there's a bunch of sequences in it I really like. Obviously, Magneto showing off his powers and just lifting a segment of the building into orbit and holding everyone there and just throwing the executioner around easily, as well as the sequence with the mutant circuit. Storm charges a bunch of metal spires Magneto has put in place to...
The mutant circuit is a more recent sort of development. The idea of a mutant circuit is that you have different mutants with different powers that complement each other. The biggest sort of mutant circuit in the Krakoa era is that there's a group of five mutants who, when they work together, can bring back the dead, essentially. Yeah. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts.
Basic mutant circuits always existed. For example, the Fastball Special, which was Colossus throwing Wolverine.
Gambit's whole deal in the comics used to be just like tossing cards at Bishop.
Yeah.
And just like charging him up, absorbs the energy and sends it right back.
Yeah, there's basic stuff like that. The animation is beautiful and it is very fluid. The animation and sound design in general is near perfect. The voice acting, like the original series, is a bit of a mixed bag. Part of that too is some of these voice actors, obviously it's been nearly 30 years, so they're going to sound different. The characters are going to sound slightly different or off. Cal Dodd's Wolverine, great example of it. He's doing this sort of gruff voice like he always did. But again, it's been 20 some odd years.
I swear to God, he sounds more Scottish. And then I was like, what is going on? And you were like, no, that's the same guy.
That's who his voice, Wolverine. Yeah. And he is Canadian.
Whatever. And I was like, well, yeah. And apparently he's Canadian.
There you go. So X-Men 97, very good. Very good start. I hope they continue like this. It's a 10-episode season, and the second episode in particular stands out. It is very good. It is a good episode of television. It's not just a good episode of X-Men comics. It's not just a good episode of an animated show. And if you're a fan of X-Men or interested at all, it's phenomenal. I think it's a must-watch, at least that episode. I hope the show can kind of continue on like that. The first season is complete. The second season is also complete, apparently. We'll see when it airs.
My only fear for the show is that the storylines from the 1990s, there are some things that happen. I mean, Gambit's kind of a big one. He's going to have a big story arc in the 90s. Possibly they're kind of leaning into that. I can sort of see that they might lean into that. It would be interesting to see more complex things where, you know, not everybody's all good and not everybody's all bad. However, I don't think that we are ready to get into those nuances.
That's part of this, though, too, is, I mean, how many kids are going to watch this? This is a series that it's a continuation of a show from 25 years ago, I think.
But it's also not like it can very well stand on its own because I don't remember any of the show from 25 years ago.
I guess that goes into the question of how do children consume media nowadays, i.e., where do you watch your kids' shows, that kind of thing. But
I think anything that is like E for everyone on Disney Plus is going to get seen pretty quickly. Because I can imagine parents are just desperate for new appropriate content, right? So like, oh, let's check and see what's new on Disney Plus. So I think I actually do feel good that it's in Disney's hands because Disney, I know, is going to do age appropriate things. They are an enormous, horrifying corporation, but they are interested in what the majority wants. And the majority of people want to see things that reflect their own life, that reflect their own experiences, that reflect the people and the lives around them. And I think X-Men is going to help a new generation of, you know, kids who feel weird and, you know, who are bullied and left out, and help kind of guide them to a good place.
Which is kind of what it's always been about. It's yeah. literally always what the books were about. And
in not so many words, it's needed. It's essentially just a whole bunch more Spider-Mans, where with great power comes great responsibility. Like, yes, Storm, you could annihilate everybody here. Professor Xavier, right? Even Jean Grey, incredible telepaths, right? Snap of the fingers, everybody thinks that they're the greatest people ever. There's no more hatred, blah, blah, blah. But just because you have that power doesn't give you the right to use it. And I think that's a lesson that is good for kids to internalize, whether they have power or they don't. Whether you identify with, you know, the mutants, because you're, in my case, it was because I was the weird kid that growing into my teens as a 12, 13, 14 year old, just feeling weird and awkward and like gross all the time. And I had a chronic pain issue. So like literally feeling different and getting bullied for that, and knowing that like, okay, I'm going to turn into a good person because I have the X-Men as role models.
Hmm.
There was literally in the 90s, a character who was like almost exactly me, Marrow. And she just had pain all the time. Her mutant power is that she has uncontrollable bone growth. So she just has bones popping out of her body and she can't control it. She can't control the pain. She's in pain and she's angry all the time. So it was really interesting to see somebody also going through that, and to see her being treated with tolerance and that, you know, like, oh, okay, this is actually like maybe Marrow needs to cool it a little bit. And like, just because you're in pain, it doesn't mean that you can be, you know, a jerk to people or things like that. And that was just me as a white chick, you know, in my teens. And now there's so many more people. There's you know, Miles Morales.
Miles Morales, a great example. Mm-hmm. Fantastic character. We have Brian Michael Bendis's initial run for him. There is also the Into the Spider-Verse film, which is amazing. It's resulted in better everything. You know, Miss Marvel, another one.
Yeah, I was going to say
her
Kamala Khan. Yeah.
Yeah, Kamala Khan. Fantastic comics. Just amazing. Yeah.
Muslim
Anyone
family.
Should read them. Yeah, it just, you get different experiences and different stories and voices out of it. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. It really improves the quality. It doesn't make it worse. It doesn't mean everybody is a, quote, diversity hire, unquote. X-Men, this is doing a good job of reflecting the comics and those experiences.
And I think honestly, too, the X-Men comics, I wouldn't necessarily have recommended for like kids or young readers. I kind of hope that we go back to that a little bit.
A reset with somebody yeah. who we have met as one of the lead writers of it post Hawkspox/Krakoa era. At some point, I think we'll do House of X, Powers of X on this show. Because I mean, I have loved that era, but. Yeah, it's fine to sort of end it and go to another new kind of status quo.
Or even if they just do an offshoot X-Men series where it's those sort of simple issue of the week thing. If you give that a little bit of direction, but also have it be that sort of more, I think we need to make X-Men for kids again, honestly. It's gotten a little bit too...
I don't know about that. I mean, part of it too is the... Yeah, but I think that dumbing it down or removing complexity doesn't benefit anybody. I think you are somewhat removing the ability, or you're underestimating the ability of kids to think critically or being able to. Like, I look at something like Avatar: The Last Airbender, which was an exceptionally popular show for kids. But you watch it and it is, it's there. There's nothing dull or there's nothing simple about it. There's nothing that's sort of brought down or speaking to a level below at all to it. There is no war in Ba Sing Se, a propaganda to cover up a regime. That's not dulled down at all. And kids got it. People enjoyed it. And I think You're right. I think House of X and Powers of the Krakoa Age is very much too intertwined, especially with itself. I think the new series is apparently going to sort of harken back to the 80s era out of the mansion, world hates and fears them, that sort of stuff. That is apparently where they're going.
And I don't want them to do that because I actually really like the Krakoa thing, but I can also realize that, no, actually, they need to.
It's fine. We've had 6 years of the Krakoa era. I think it's fine to end it. And
we haven't really explored so much.
About I know, but I don't know that you can in X number of years. They managed to really introduce a lot. Anyway, this has been Off Nerd. Producer Basil Bear says it's time to go. You can find us via email. UpNerdPodcasts@gmail.com. You can be found on Facebook, UpNerdPodcasts, found on Twitter @UpNerdPodcasts, found on Blue Sky, UpNerdPodcasts.bksky, I think, whatever the Blue Sky.
I'm going to make you a sticky note.
Yeah.
And you're going to tape it to your monitor.
Boy.
Because apparently it's, you kind of like it, as I understand it.
It's not bad. It's different.
But at least now, UpNerd has a little bit more comics content, and there will be more coming up.
Thank you for listening. It is appreciated. We will be back with top three, bottom three, The Witcher next week. Bye.